Hi, I'm here interviewing my grandfather. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Richard Stamper, proud to be Kate's grandfather.
Right, we could just get into the questions, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one that I guess I wanted to ask was that, who was your biggest role model as a young person? And why were they such a big role model to you?
Biggest role model as a young person, I would have to say, in the era that we grew up, it would have had to have been Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And at that time, he was the president that got us through the Great Depression, Second World War, and it was a very positive time for the presidency. And in our household, he was like a hero.
Yeah, I remember Grandma Reiner always used to talk, like, she has the one portrait of FDR. And actually, I have it now. It's in my room. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moving on to the next question. If you could relive one year or one decade of your life, what would it be and why?
Well, that's a tough question, but I would have to say, I think my 16th year, which you are in now, Kate, was probably the happiest year of my life. You know, you get a chance to drive, you get your freedom, and you're becoming a young adult, and everything is optimistic, and I really did enjoy that year of my life.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's like, I mean, obviously things are different now, but I definitely understand what you mean. It's
mm-hmm.
like, there's a lot going on, and it's all kind of crazy, but sometimes it's like a good kind of crazy, and like, it's fun to kind of have like a lot, there's a lot of optimism that you have.
Well, we didn't have you guys have more restrictions on your, especially now with COVID-19, you have restrictions on your movement. You live in the suburbs, so you're not able to kind of wander out on your own. We grew up in an urban setting where you could walk out the door and basically you didn't have to worry. There weren't the strange things that are going on in today's world. So the parents were more at ease letting you roam and letting you sort of grow up on your own without a lot of supervision. Can't do that now.
Yeah, I mean, especially now, I feel like it's not getting like the typical teenage experience, but it's still, you know, I think that there's parts of it that are like still the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely understand what you mean. Just like having, it's very hopeful time. Like a lot of things are looking up, like a lot of new things, which is really fun. But, yeah.
I think the exciting thing to be living in your era is the technological things that are happening, not only in like the electronic type theater, but also in the healthcare theater. Some of the new therapeutics are coming on, and the bioengineering is really happening right now. I think it's a very exciting time to be, you know, looking for a career and picking a career that might really be very much fun and very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Especially through school, like you had a lot of options to kind of explore your career and like, I guess, what you want to do. And
mm-hmm.
it's just everything is like changing. And I went on this, like, I did like a couple of like field trips, I guess, where we would just go and kind of learn what it's like to be like a marine biologist or like a surgeon or something like that. And they're like, oh yes. And by the time that you get here, it'll be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of like, that's just really, it's really exciting.
A lot of the opportunities that you guys have now didn't even exist when we were growing up. You know, it was heavy industry or, you know, it was right after World War II, so everyone was focused on manufacturing and rebuilding the economy and the world at the time. And a lot
yeah.
of these things have evolved that you guys have opportunities to seek out employment and just really never happened. You know, weren't there. They hadn't been invented yet. You guys are lucky in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. We learn about this stuff in school all the time. Just like right now, everything is just changing so quickly. You know, in 10 years, things will be totally different. 10 years ago, things were like completely different just technologically. So I think, yeah, it's like, I keep saying this, it's just exciting, but also a little bit, everything's kind of crazy,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, exciting.
Yeah, I think so.
I have another question. If you could speak to your younger self, what advice would you give?
Well, I would say to my younger self, don't be so conservative and take more risks. If I had to speak to my younger self, I think you had a tendency to be more cautious in our era. And, but that's what I would say. I'd say take more risks than you did. Not be afraid. I think probably what I would like to have done is started a company sometime. But, you know, as life moves on, you just get different obstacles, and that just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my biggest counsel to myself. The other thing I would say is not put so much time into your, like in our era, it was a single family earner. You know, women weren't generally employed then, so your income was the income that fed your family. So really taking a risk could have impacted your family if it didn't work out that well. So I think most people sort of stayed with corporations probably longer than they should have, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, again, things are really different. Like, both my parents work. If one of my parents wanted to, like, kind of take a risk, it wouldn't really have, you know, it's not as much of, like, a all-or-nothing kind of situation.
Yeah, you wouldn't go to zero income. That's what the threat was in our era.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, especially, like, after, obviously, I have no idea what it was like, but thinking probably after the Great Depression, a lot of people just want to be economically stable, which is totally understandable, and risks probably weren't that ideal, I guess.
Well, we were raised by Depression-era parents, so, you know, obviously they lived through the uncertainty of employment and, you know, where the next meal was coming from. And in our case, you know, my dad did lose his job, and he had to depend on the, what they called the government cheese at the time, which was subsidies for food, and that was not a pretty sight. So I think the memories of something like that does stick in your brain when you're a kid. See your parents go to the surplus place and get groceries, and you just are saying to yourself, I don't want that to happen to me if I don't have to, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It's weird to think how all these events are just going to shape everything, like our decisions later on. I don't know. I guess I never really thought about like how the mindset.
I look at this COVID situation, to me, it's very analogous to 1967, 1968, which was the height of the unrest in the United States, a fallout from the opposition to the Vietnam War. I was in the Army at the time, and when Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy got assassinated, they mobilized our unit. I was in Colorado, but they mobilized our unit. We went to Denver Airport for a few days, waiting to be deployed to a U.S. city that was burning. So, you know, a lot of these things that are going on now with Antifa and BLM is kind of very similar to the type of civil unrest that we had during those years prior to the ending of the Vietnam War. And also, the other really weird similarity with this COVID, during the Vietnam War, they used to give the death count every day on the news, the number of soldiers got killed, like they're doing now with COVID, how many people died from COVID this, COVID that, and so, you know, in a way, history has repeated itself here. Yeah, it's not quite as bad yet, but I've got a bad feeling about this upcoming election that things could get a little crazier than they are right now.
Yeah, that is crazily similar, like how there's just a lot of civil unrest, like people, a lot of people are very unhappy. And I mean, yeah, sometimes for like good reason, like there's a lot of stuff going on, and like it's affecting a lot of people. There's a lot of violence, a lot of unhappiness.
Yeah, and that's, I think, and in the case in like 1968, there was really no reason for the war, and they kept trying to win it because no one wanted to be the first president to ever lose a war in the United States, and the people didn't want it, and it lasted so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I got drafted, you know, your cousin, your uncles, who were younger than me, were threatened to be drafted. You know, that was like they were 10 years younger than me. So it gives you an idea how long this thing went on, and it was awful. And now you've got a situation where there's a big difference between what we'd like them to be doing rather than what they're doing now, which is acting like a bunch of children.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I feel like politics has changed, but sometimes I also wonder if it has always just stayed the same and now we're just more aware of it. Like, now we see everything.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm just kind of like, maybe it was always like this, but now we just know more. So now we can be angrier about it.
Well, you're right. I think, again, going back to the technological change, in our time you had three TV stations, NBC, CBS, ABC, and you had anchors there that read the news, and it was your only source of news other than the newspapers. So
yeah.
Now you've got the internet, you've got all these different websites, different opinions, you've got disinformation, real information. It's hard to sort out the facts from the fiction. But it does create a lot of anxiety, I think, in terms of what is the truth. You know, you watched that debate all the other night. Both guys were lying. So which one do you believe, you know? And who's telling the truth? And none of it's doing us taxpayers any good, because these are major strategies that need to be done, and they just are focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah.
It's a bad time for politicians, because we've elected the wrong people. They're not real.
Yeah. There's just so much out there. It's hard to, like, what are you even supposed to listen? Like, there's no way to listen to it all. So.
Yeah. I mean, just take this this COVID thing we're talking about. They should be getting together and give us a unified message rather than challenging everything, because they're supposed to pull together and, give the public an honest opinion rather than a political opinion that's going on. I don't know if the answer was right, but again, this is an evolving thing. Also, the parameters of the disease are changing. You know more about it. Different approaches available now. Instead of embracing them, they do come up with a solution. One team fights the other, and it does us no good.
Yeah. Like, everything has become very politicized.
Mm-hmm.
Is not good. I feel like everything, like, people's personal beliefs are just kind of clouding scientific, like, consensus, which is, you know, just not good for anyone. And, you know, I don't know. It's just Yeah,
I mean, when the biggest thing out of vice presidential debate, the biggest thing everyone's talking about is the fly that landed on Mike Pence's head. You know, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen the memes on the internet now. Some of them are kind of funny.
I totally agree. The fly was funny, but there are also, we got to unpack a lot of stuff from the actual debate part of things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We can laugh at the debate and the fly. That's my
thought. Yeah, but when you watch those newscasts, oh my God, the fly is a symbol of this, a symbol of that. They're really out there, like you said, they're so emotional and filled with hate. They can't be objective, and they can't focus. As we used to say in the business world, they can't see the forest from the trees. I mean,
yeah,
it's awful.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I have a good question that I think will be funny to answer. But what is something about today's youth that really surprises you or is different from when you guys were younger?
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I'm surprised about how much people are dissing you guys. You know, if you listen to the media, you would think you guys are a bunch of idiots. But when I meet you and your friends and Sammy's friends, from my perspective of when I was your age, you guys are much more formed and really nice people. You're so maligned by the reports, you know, about millennials this, millennials that. I think it's awful. It's disrespectful to you guys, because you guys have a much more fuller schedule than we ever had. You don't have the freedoms we had. We used to, you know, go to school and do some homework and then we're out the door. It seems like you guys, if you're taking your coursework seriously, like I see you guys do, you're really more committed, and you've got more after school activities than we ever had, more clubs and so social things like that. So, but I said, if my overall surprise is, and I even said this when your mother and Aunt Nicole were growing up, I used to talk to people at work, and I think it's a common thing just to want to paint teenagers in a bad light. But I always said that they were also their kids. Now, maybe you guys just pick good people to live with, but I mean, you know. The friends of yours and the friends of my daughters that I met were always very impressive compared to some of the kids that I grew up with. And if that would be, do you think that's a surprise? That's what, you know, surprises me when it's a sort of reality. But you guys are more mature and more informed.
I wasn't sure if you were going to roast me or not. I wasn't sure if you were like,
I, No, I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I could never roast you guys. You guys are really well-mannered, nice kids. I mean, and that's my perspective. I can see a big difference in the level of the quality of you guys.
Yeah, that's very nice. I wasn't sure. Cause I feel like as you said, like a lot of people don't blame, like they blame our generation for a lot of things. Like, I don't mean to get defensive, but, like, we haven't even done anything yet. Like, I don't know, we're so young. Like, how much of an impact can we really have? We've only been alive for, like, 15 years.
You know what I think it is, Kate? Here's what I'll tell you what I think it is. The older generation is looking at the younger generation. Like, and you got to realize, I grew up in the 60s. So the theme in the 60s was don't trust anyone over 30. Because they were tearing down the old hierarchy of let's say who set the rules, the government and the church and all that. So they were in the process of destroying that. And in those days, our parents resented that fact. They were dressing differently. They were wearing their hair long. They were growing beard. It was just a totally counterculture evolving. And I think it threatened the older generation, like in your generation growing up. You know, and I think it's just probably an age-old problem where the younger generation is coming up with new ideas, new ways to live life, new thoughts on what they think is right and wrong, and the older generation would like to see their values carried on. Well, it just doesn't happen like that. That's life. You know, you guys are going to want to strike out on your own. As long as it's not all bad, what's wrong with that, you know? But sometimes those things need to be overturned, so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't think our generation is going to have, too many issues with. I feel like we're already pretty, like, crazy. I don't know if crazy is the right word. We're already pretty, like, fired up.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just have to see where the next.
Well, you guys, you guys got your, you guys are carrying on some environmental stuff, and you've got a lot of different social issues, you know, you're more. You know, you're the composition of the population in terms of diversity is so much different than when we were growing up. You know, and we grew up in basically a European type setting, if you will. You know, most of the people that I knew were descendants of European heritage. Now you've got a mixture of people. You've got a lot of Asian content there. So their background, their history, their culture is totally different. Which is kind of fascinating. I always like different cultures, to be honest with you. You know, you can learn a lot, and they have a different insight into life and living and what they consider the quality of life. So you guys will be tainted by that. It's a thing that we never had. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like definitely, like North Allegheny is obviously, it's very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's definitely really, it's really nice getting to like, just meet everyone, you know, who, mm-hmm. like, get a different perspective on things and what I would normally think. It's, like listening to, like, other people, like, what the holidays they celebrate,
mm-hmm.
like, their kind of, like, their traditional, like, their, like, customs, all that kind of stuff, like, the food, which I love to hear about. Very interesting, yeah.
You're seeing a world without having to travel, basically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Super, you know, grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, but I think I know the answer to it, but I'll just ask it. All right, what is something you really enjoy doing or something that brings you a lot of joy?
Something I really enjoy doing or something that gives me a lot of joy. Well, it's been fun watching you guys grow up. How about that?
Oh.
You and Sammy, it's been a real blast to see your grandkids grow up. I'm going to miss that with Nicole's kid being away. I think as far as a fulfilling thing, I really did enjoy traveling a lot when I was younger, you know, with my job. I got to see the world and got to do a lot of nice things that way. But, you know, when you talk about things that are very fulfilling, I think watching you guys and having you close by has been really at least this last couple decades of my life, I guess you could say, has been really a fun thing.
I'm going to be honest. I thought you were going to say golf.
Nah, well... You know, I'm not a crazy golfer. I mean, once or twice a week is enough for me.
Yeah.
One thing I really did enjoy doing was sailing. You know,
oh, yeah.
I did get to do a lot of airboat sailing in those days, and that was fun. The other thing I really did like was skiing. Skiing was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I like golfing now because that's something I can do. It's, you know, it's pretty accessible now. But I can tell you, I've never enjoyed it more than two rounds of golf a week. If I'd do three, it would just seem like work. Because I'm not that good at it. I like being outside, you know, and golf courses are pretty and fun to be on.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, I can't imagine how, like, beautiful, like, sailing would be.
Yeah. So it's a slow way to travel, but it's fun when you get there, you know?
Yeah. I have another question. What was your favorite thing to do when you were younger?
Tell you, I think the favorite thing that we did is we hung out. We used to, you know, which is something you guys don't do now because you're living in suburbia. But because our houses really didn't have all this electronic stuff and video games and they have to keep you inside, and the houses weren't that nice like the ones you guys live in, fortunate enough to live in, we would go out and meet on the street corners, you know, and we'd get together with a group of us would get together. We always had enough of kids to pick up a baseball team, and we always organized our own football games. Like we used to play, like I grew up in Montroy, we would play Troy Hill, which is another community, and we'd play out of Montroy. So we organized our own sports in that. But the thing was, it was all the guys you hung out with that formed these teams. And so, you know, we went to dances and things like that. But that was really one of the most fun things to do when I was growing up. Because, you know, we interacted so much with people. And it was always face-to-face. It was not, well, we didn't have cell phones or anything like that. So, you know, to organize something like that, you can imagine. I still don't know how we did it. You know, now you see how things get, like groups get organized, the meetings get organized and all that. It's all done electronically. It's very efficient. I still don't know how we got 10, 12 people together to form a football team and play pickup games and stuff like that. You know, 20 people. But we did. And it was kind of unique, you know?
Yeah. I definitely don't think that could happen now. I mean, obviously, a lot of my friends are living. They live, like, I can't walk to their houses. But I just, like, I feel like everyone, like, as you said, like, we kind of just, no one really prioritizes, like, hanging out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad.
And that's what I said earlier, like you asked me about your generation. You guys get booked every minute of every day as far as I can see. I always like that little bit of downtime where you just hang out and tell jokes and swap lies and, you know, play cards or do something, you know, as a group. And that always was with no commitments, you know what I mean? Our summers were not committed. We didn't do camps and things like that, so we had to create our own entertainment, you know?
Yeah. No one really, like, I feel like everyone, every time you try to, like, plan a hangout, which, I mean, mm-hmm. I do this sometimes, too. I don't mean to, like, attack anyone. But, like, they're, like, always people who are, like, sorry, I can't go, you know, or, mm-hmm. like, have to reschedule, you know. Like, it never even just be, like, hey, guys, let's hang out today. Or, like, you kind of have to, like, be very meticulous with it and, like, you know. Because it's just, like, it's hard. Like, I mean, everyone either has homework or, you know, something else, like, in my world. I guess it'd be, like, rehearsal or, like, dance class, something like that. So, mm-hmm. like, everyone always kind of has, like, an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I feel like it's hard to make, you know, just, like, having fun a priority. Mm-hmm. It's, like, which is sad because, you know, when you're, like, 16 years old, like, you should get that. But I also, you know, I don't mean to complain because I do, like, a lot of the stuff I do, and I'm glad to be able to do it, you know?
I'd say your stuff will lead to a more productive end where you pick up a skill set. Like, we would meet and just, you know, say, hey, meet at the ball field at 12 o'clock, and people would just show up, or meet at a basketball court or the football field or something like that, you know? But you guys have more structured things which might actually lead to a skill set that's usable later in life. But ours was more people interactions, and I think as far as our generation goes, when you get face-to-face, you can sense things better because, you know, you've kind of been doing that your whole life. Like you get in the meeting room with a bunch of people, like in a business scenario, you can tell who's for you, who's against you, who's lying, who's not. You know, I mean, it's really weird, but your instincts are better.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions, like I guess wrap-up questions.
Okay.
So what are some life lessons that your parents taught you? How are they so relevant to you?
Growing up like we did, more or less as Depression era kids, you know, Depression era parents, one thing they taught you was the value of money. You didn't throw it around like, you know, like you see today, you guys are more apt to spend money. And funny, I was talking to someone a while ago and they're talking about how, gee, we've got more money now than we ever thought we'd have, but we just don't want to spend it. And we can't put our finger on it. But I think it has to do with the value system that that your parents gave you, you know, which is the one I got. And I attended a seminar one time when I was working. The name of the program was, You Are Now What You Were Then. What it basically meant is when you were growing up with your parents, they would talk, you know, they were saying, like in my case, our case, go to college, get that shingle, go to college, get that piece of paper. You know, don't do this, don't do that. And you think you're going to avoid that, but then it starts coming out of you later in life. You know, that you don't even know you're doing it, but you then become your dad or your mother or something like that, you know. It really is funny, but it does have an impact. And one of them was definitely economics. And, you know, mostly treating people fairly and being honest as much as you can. That was all. And don't lie, which is something really big pick on my one brother, because he likes to lie. But I mean, because you can never remember your lies, you always get trapped in them. You know. So as far as that goes, I'd say it was fairly Christian upbringing too in those days, because most people either Catholic, Protestant, and so that value system of Christianity was imposed on kids because you went to a parochial school. And so the life lessons of Christianity were pretty well imparted on kids, because even if like today, like in my case, I'm not a practicing Catholic, I still value the ethics they taught us and the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. So, you know what's right and what's wrong. No one has to tell you. And I think you learned that from the schools, from teachings of Christianity, which is something that probably your generation has missed out on as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel like not even just Christianity, just like, I guess, like all religions, like having, I guess, like a moral and a code,
mm-hmm.
like we don't really have, which I mean is good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be nice to have kind of a thing you can fall back on and be like, kind of mm-hmm. go to if you're like looking for something, if it's right or wrong. But I mean, you know, with everything, they're like,
mm-hmm.
with all like practicing religion, there are pros and cons to everything. But I mean, I think it's great that like people would have that.
Yeah, it's a foundation to build on. It gives you a base, and you know, you got to sort out the good and the bad sometimes, and you know.
Yeah. I have another question.
Sure.
What did you think 2020 was going to be like when you were young?
I didn't think I'd live this long. I never thought I'd see 2020. 2020, I guess, if you would have told me, like if I was, let's assume you're talking about your age, when I was 16, there was a book that came out shortly thereafter, Brave New World, and it seemed so far-fetched that the world could move in this direction, that it sounded so preposterous. And if you go back yourself, have you read that book at all? Brave New World by Aldous Huxley? If you read that book and take the time period in which it was written and see how it stacks up, this guy was a true visionary. I would have never guessed what he said would come true, and we're pretty close to it. I mean, we really are. The way technology has advanced, I didn't know what to think of 2020, to be quite honest with you, at your age. I thought your vision of how things can change and how fast it can change isn't that solid at that age. But as you get older, you see things changing pretty fast, and really at speeds now that are things change in years, it would take light years to change when I was growing up, you know. But if I had to pick it, I guess I would have said it would just be pretty much what I was used to, you know. Like you'd have a nice work life, nice job. If you put your nose to the grindstone, got a good education and worked hard, you could be successful and you were not limited in opportunities. I see some of that disappearing now with the way things are getting stacked. But I don't know. I never thought the United States would be this close to socialism. That I would have never guessed would be even a remote possibility. And I don't think it's, I never envisioned people having this kind of wealth, to be honest with you. I mean, I never thought, I was thinking about this when you said to do this interview. You know, we used to sit around a table and say, man, if I can only make $10,000 a year, I'd be in the tall clover. You'd be making a lot of money, you know. And now, I mean, that is such a preposterously low amount of money, you know. And I mean, you could see the convenience was coming on board when I was growing up that our parents didn't have before us. Like, not every family had a car. No one had two cars. One car is what you had. And now people got two cars and homes that are like probably triple, quadruple the size of what we saw people growing up in, you know. So I think that's a very hard question, you know. Depends on what you change in life. Now, as I get older, you can see things evolving. And like if you'd asked me when I retired 50 years ago, what 2020 would be like, I could probably tell you that I could see this wave of computerization and e-commerce and that coming along because I was involved in some project at work. And I could see some of this biotech industry evolving because, again, I was involved with a chemical company that had a pretty robust health science group that we used to get information on all the time. So if you'd asked me 20 years ago, I'd say none of this stuff that's happening now is amazing to me, except the change in the politics. And what I would not have predicted is the mean-spiritedness of people now. That I would never predict. I would have thought that people would be fulfilling their material fantasies like they are now. Basically, anything you want, you can get materially, but it hasn't seemed to make people happier. They seem a little more disjointed and not connected with the real world anymore. That's kind of a long answer. I hope that gives you some insight anyways.
No, I mean, I'm trying to think what I think that the world would be like in like 50 years or so, and I have no idea.
Yeah, I agree. There are books out there, Kate. One I read a number of years ago called Megatrends, and a guy kept updating them. Take the very big trends that were going on and say what's going to happen. I don't know if he's updated his books or not. I haven't followed that. I've read two of them. They're pretty interesting because if you want to see someone who's a visionary, these guys can have a good insight as to what might be happening in the future based on what they see happening now. So it's not only technology and stuff like that. It's trends and politics and behaviors and things like that.
Yeah, I'll have to check those out because I never read the book that you were talking about earlier, but mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting to read a book now and then be like, in 50 years, be like, let's see how everything turned out.
Yeah.
How right were they?
Yeah. Well, 1984 was certainly that way. George Orwell's book and this. Brave New World, they were both visionary books and still popular today. I mean, incredible.
Yeah. You know what I almost think of? I think of like the Twilight Zone. Whenever they're like, it's the year 2000.
Yeah.
They act like it's like super futuristic, but then you're like watching it and you're like, wait, that's like now.
Yeah.
And then like, you're like, wait, that's like after now. Mm-hmm. And like there's that one episode where like, I forget what, but they're like, technology, like they're like robots or I don't know. You know how that
sounds. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Everything
is like, totally crazy. It's like gone off the rails.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's weird though, because I feel like we always think it's going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, maybe today, maybe if someone like came to the future, they would think it was really bad. But like, I guess like now you're just like, this is just how it is.
Yeah.
So I think like people are really good at adapting and like just finding the good out of everything and like, you know, just making life the best it can be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that about wraps it up. For like questions and stuff, but if you have anything else you want to add, feel free to.
Yeah, I think we had a pretty good discussion, Kate. I'm comfortable. I don't have anything else to add.
Yeah.
Thank you for including me. Kind of fun to talk to you like this philosophically.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. For being here virtually, I guess, is like the new being here.
Well, okay. Well, good. Okay, honey, you have a good one. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, you too.
All right, see you now.
See ya.